Welcome to The Allusionist, a show for Radiotopia from PRX, in which I, Helen Zaltzman, pull up language's skirt to laugh at its underpants. Coming up in today's show...
To lift and separate. You're suddenly shapelier.
Sort of.
To warm up, here's some word history.
Let's learn why ladies' busts are called busts. It's not because they're busted. It's a reference to the sculpture of the same name, you know, a head on top of a fraction of chest. The bust stops tactfully before the sculptor had to contend with any nipples. These busts were often found on tombs to commemorate the occupants, so they got their name from bustum, a Latin word that meant tomb or corpse, which itself descended from the Latin for funeral pyre, or the place where bodies are burnt. So now, my mind's eye keeps picturing a woman's bust with a miniature cremation ceremony taking place on it. Thanks a bunch, etymology. Yet again, you ruin everything. On with the show. There are loads of synonyms for underwear. Undergarments, foundation garments, scanties, intimates, unmentionables, lingerie, skivvies, smalls. And there are lots of synonyms for underpants. Knickers, undercrackers, grandies, drawers, panties, loomers, briefs, banana hammock. If you're getting turned on by this list, please switch off this podcast immediately and go for a brisk walk. There's also a huge variety of terms, slang, medical and otherwise, for the body parts contained in underwear. But when it comes to bras, are you going to use any other word than bra? Yes, Helen, I call bras by their full name, brassiere. No, you don't. I've never heard anybody use that word. The first time I encountered the word brassiere was as a child, leafing through my picture dictionary. It was on the page about clothes, and I thought it was very exotic, but that's pretty much the last time I've ever seen brassiere used as well. Officially, the first ever appearance of the word brassiere to mean a lady's bra occurred in Vogue magazine in 1907. But what kind of garment was this referring to? What were women wearing on their boobs in 1907?
Corsets were getting shorter, or they were more moving down the body.
This is Laurie Smith from the London College of Fashion. Laurie wrote her master's thesis on bras, so she really is the master of bras.
So corsets used to cover the breasts as well. But then with fashions changing and skirts becoming slimmer, the corsets became a bit longer down the hips, and so that they weren't lumpy under the dress on the top half. They finished underneath the boobs. So, of course, that sort of left a bit of a... you just have your dress on top of your naked skin.
Filthy.
And nobody wants to do that. No, very filthy. So, yes, to protect the clothes from the body underneath, they put another layer in between. And so, yeah, the sort of shorter chemise-like top just became the bra. It was there were quite a lot of sort of bust improvers or bust supporters that maybe had a little bit of boning and stuff in to begin with, but then as the fashions got a little bit more kind of sheer on the top half and you got the kind of shirt waister blouses, the bra just became a little bit of lining really for underneath that, so you weren't being indecent.
These brassieres were almost like extra blouses underneath women's actual blouses.
I can find it. There it is. This is an advertisement, which is apparently the first one that used the word brassiere, but nobody seems to quite know why.
The advert in the 23rd of May 1907 edition of Vogue for De Beauvoir's brassieres and combination undergarments shows four rather sleepy-looking women waiting around in their undies and outdoor shoes, as you do. Their waists are the same size as their necks, while their chests are improbably barrelly, as shapeless and overstuffed as if they'd each swallowed a large cushion. They certainly don't look fit for battle, even though brassiere was originally a French term for a piece of armour. Deriving from the French word for arm, bras, a brassiere was an arm protector, and later on a breastplate. So presumably the word was chosen firstly because French words were considered sophisticated by underwear companies, secondly because it was worn on the same part of the body as a breastplate brassiere, and thirdly because women's underwear was a lot like armour. Corsetry was reinforced with whalebone or metal. Lycra was a long way off.
They were about shaping the body, and it also, very strangely, became thought of that rather than, as people might think now, that actually if you went round lacing yourself very tightly into things, that actually you know, maybe your core muscles, because having nothing to do, they might not be quite as strong because you were using the corset for support. But years ago, they seemed to think that actually it was better to wear a corset because it would help help give you a good posture, and it would help children grow and to be kind of straight and strong.
You heard right, children wore corsets, girls and boys.
But then men didn't go around wearing them.
Very true.
They, so it can't be not good.
That is a very good point, yes. I wonder at what point a young boy would be able to ditch his corset and become and become a manly man that let it all hang out.
It's that kind of underwear bar mitzvah or something.
But a change was going to come to women's underpinnings. These kind of wearable prison cells were neither practical nor comfortable, and around the late 19th, early 20th century, feminist organisations, such as the National Dress Reform Association, were calling to emancipate women from their corsets so that women would be able to do more things, like working, sticking votes into ballot boxes, and being able to move. And the clothes they wore over them were lightening up too, becoming less structured, and they were made of thinner fabrics. In 1910, 19-year-old New York socialite Mary Phelps Jacobs didn't want the look of her diaphanous evening dress to be ruined by the intrusions of the usual scaffolding beneath. So she grabbed two silk handkerchiefs, sewed them together, made straps out of pink ribbon, lashed on the garment, and sailed off unimpeded into the night. Her friends started begging her to make them these bras too. They were a roaring success, and on the 3rd of November 1914, Mary Phelps Jacobs was granted the patent for the brassiere, and thus she's the one who usually gets the credit for inventing the modern bra. This kind of bra really became popular during the First World War because they needed to conserve metal, plus women were working in factories, which wasn't really compatible with rigid corsetry. Unlike present-day bras promising uplift and cleavage fit to divert rivers down, women of this era actually wanted to flatten down their chests.
The flappers mixed everything up, really. The line of those clothes was just so different. And the corsets by that time, it was still the same, starting under the bust and going down across the hips. You would think that the 1920s, it was all kind of free and loose. But actually, I can't really tell whether it was that women didn't want to quite be that loose, because it's having a slim line underneath your dress looked quite nice. Not everybody is completely free of lumps and bumps, as we all know. Or whether it was the people in corsetry departments going, oh, no, well, actually, it'll look much better if you don't completely ditch the corsets and go with these fabulous new things called girdles with elastic panels in. But, of course, they had all the same steel boning as the corsets. It was just ever so slightly more comfortable to wear. But on the top half, obviously, because of the more sort of boyish shape, the little chemise-type brassiere underneath, just became a very sort of flattening bandeau, because all you wanted to do was just squash everything flat so that your lovely dresses just hung straight down from the shoulders. When you got into the 1930s and the fashions changed again from the sort of flat boyish styles in the 20s and went to a more, I hate the word, but a more womanly silhouette, that's when the flat bandeau bras, they started to use traditional dressmaking techniques with like different sort of darts and shaping to define the individual breasts and provide uplift. And that's when the obsession with uplift kind of properly started, was when in the 1930s. And also the 1930s was when brassiere got shortened to bra by pretty much everybody.
They just didn't have time. There was a war about to happen. They needed to save some syllables.
Exactly.
There was, of course, another significant linguistic moment for the word bra in the 20th century. Its affiliation with the word burning.
The bra burning thing is a big old myth, really. It was protesters at the, I think, Miss America pageant, who, as part of their protest, they were throwing things into a fire, one of which was a bra. But it was a symbolic thing. It wasn't like everyone was discarding their bras. Not for that reason, anyway. And for a lot of people still wore bras. They just changed to have a softer look to them, a natural look, as they called it. So instead of all the kind of the structure an uplift and sort of pointiness that you would get in sort of the 50s and the 60s. This was a kind of no bra look. So there was a lot of sheer fabrics and kind of sort of looser looking stuff in the 70s, but the vast majority of women didn't really get rid of them. And there's a lot of feminists I know that would never get rid of their bras.
So the bra's reputation as a very political garment is undeserved, really.
Yeah, pretty much. I think there's, the focus should really be on other things when it comes to the feminist fight. But yeah, it does seem to get reproduced in a lot of books, though. A lot of the books that have pictures of bras, and they talk about the bra burning, and you think, well, hang on, why have you still got photos of bras from those decades if everyone burned them and didn't wear them?
Wonderful, wonder bra, to be free and alive everywhere that you go, is to wear what you dare anywhere and to travel with flair.
A very liberating message in a 1969 advert for Wonder Bra there. Bra master Laurie Smith blogs about underwear and other things at rarelywearslipstick.com, and she tweets at lipstick_laurie. In case you were wondering earlier about all those underpants words and why they're all plural, apart from banana hammock, let's not dwell, it's because the garment itself used to be two halves, separate fabric legs tied together at the waist, but left open at the crotch. That's right, Queen Victoria wore split crotch knickers. The Allusionist was produced by me, Helen Zaltzman. Thanks to Laurie Smith, Amber Butchart, and Greg Jenner. I posted some pictures of old bras, by which I mean the historic old bras, not just some bras that should have been thrown out several years ago, on theallusionist.org, and if you want to chat about words in between episodes, find Allusionist Show on Facebook and Twitter.
Your randomly selected word from the dictionary today is
limnology. Noun, the study of lakes and other bodies of fresh water. Try using it in an email today. The show will be back in 2 weeks. Keep yourself well supported till then.